Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the Riptide. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, cretins.
Guys, I need a catchphrase.
Yeah, you do, man.
Ow, that hurts.
There you go. I like that.
Catchphrase? Like a STD catchphrase?
Yes, ooh, that's
that,
catchy.
Ooh, that burns.
It burns.
Honest to God, my son was telling me that last week he was doing these drone experiments out in the baseball diamond over at university. He managed to kneel down on top of a fire ant nest without realizing it for several minutes until he realized that there's
his all junk these, was on fire.
Yeah, and all these ants crawling over his equipment, and it's like, why is my leg burning so much? And he's got like multiple ant bites on his leg now, so. I guess it doesn't speak well for my genetic line in terms of reaction time, but I suppose it's kind of amusing.
Just spin it the other way. Just say you have high pain tolerance.
Yeah.
How tough it. You guys are.
That's right.
Think about
our
it.
Viking ancestry, yes.
Yeah, I would,
there you go.
I would say that, John, your reaction time is really... I mean, we can get a calendar and measure it for you if you want.
Yeah.
You're not known for your lightning reflexes, I would say.
That could be true. Yeah. Rapier wit, but...
Rapier wit.
But yeah. Slow response time.
Yeah. Don't be using a rapier.
Yes.
Just, yeah.
Very true, yes.
I would consider you more the broadsword kind of guy.
Right, okay.
And the rapier kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I've been wanting to build a battle
Maybe
axe.
Maybe battle axe, yes.
Yeah.
You haven't been home to use your forge.
Well, actually, I have. I was making some Damascus just a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And cut my thumb on it yesterday, in fact, as I was polishing it.
Your lightning reflexes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know
it's. I think it's almost a requirement that you cut yourself on a new blade.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like christening it or something. You know,
proving the
first
steel.
Blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to give it that first feeding, and proper sword steel.
Yeah. Don't they usually use like goats or something for that?
Yeah.
Plunge it into a some sort of poor farm animal.
Yeah, I'm kind of limited to squirrels in our
squirrels.
Place.
So you're sticking to smaller blades.
Right.
Or the odd chihuahua on a spit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although you know, funny you should mention.
He's an urban forager. I'm just saying.
But I did have an opportunity for a bear about a month ago.
Yeah.
I was headed to the airport early one morning and. Noticed this, came around the corner, and here's this large black dog running in front of the truck.
Oh, okay.
And I thought to myself,
different kind of bear. I was thinking as a, you know, proximity to San Francisco or whatever. I was just thinking, you're talking something completely different.
Yes, very large, fat, wide black dog, which turned out to be, in fact, a bear running in front of me. And but it managed to get off the road before I got too close. If it had been Chris White, it would have been all over for that bear.
But, Chris White has been known to murder an animal or two with his RV. Yeah, you were in the RV at yes, that time, too.
That's right.
You weren't sitting in the passenger seat when that thing was like, ah!
Yeah. You saw its final moments, the panicked expression in its eyes.
I think I saw its final moments and my final moments. We exchanged in our eyes at the time that went under the bus, yes.
Yes. That was funny.
He's like, what should I do? I'm like, just keep rolling, man.
Yeah, they keep going.
There's nothing to recover on that thing. What are you going to do? Oh, my God. Yeah. Speaking of rapier wit and bears, our good friend John Blickman.
Thrown under the bus, yes.
Gets thrown under the bus pretty much every show with regularity.
Right.
But, you know, he's got a great sense of humor, and so he
that's what he's told.
We keep repeating that so he doesn't get pissed off and cut the funding for the show.
Right.
But if you have a chance, I would highly recommend you go and check out what his high level of intelligence has created across the wide span of the equipment they produce, the fine detail of the workmanship, the innovation of what they come up with. I mean, truly, if you can name one person that has innovated more in brewing equipment and home brewing in the world, the number one at the top of the list is John Blickman.
That is very true.
There's nobody else even close. Yeah. I mean, there's other people that come out with some pretty cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But Blickman's head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah, consistently.
Yeah, and you could see this stuff at BlickmanEngineering.com. They're always coming out with new stuff, so it behooves you to check back frequently. And if you get a chance, I would love it if you would send an email to John Blickman. You can use feedback@BlickmanEngineering.com and tell him, hey, thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for paying for the show so I don't have to. I really enjoy the show, or you hate the show, and why are we talking about things of a sexual nature? Right. Because we're pretty much infantile in our maturity. And
we try to keep brewing fun.
Yeah, Pivo. All right. Yeah. All right. Yes. Yes, that's me and Paul.
Do you know they're coming out with a Deadpool Christmas movie?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah. You should check out the trailer on YouTube. It's hilarious. He kidnaps Fred Savage, you know, Princess Bride.
Yes, yes.
He has him on the bed and everything. It's very funny.
Are they really coming out with a movie, or is it just a fake trailer?
They really are, yeah. Once Upon a Deadpool.
There you go. All right. I know what I'm going to be doing on Christmas. All right.
Anyways,
I would say hi to our good friend John Blickman. Make his Christmas by telling him how much you appreciate it. Hey, and if you're buying a Christmas present, make it a Blickman Engineering product. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know.
That's what I'm doing.
Tell your significant other that's what I want for Christmas. One of these expensive, cool things.
Mm-hmm.
Or not so expensive, cool things.
Lasts a lifetime.
That's true. You get yourself a nice brew plant. That thing's lasting pretty much forever. You could brew many thousands of batches of beer on it, mm-hmm. and then sell it for probably more than you paid for it at that time if you take good care of it. Because it won't really wear out, and the price of all these things are going to go up over time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the price of stainless going up. All right. Today, we are covering fermentation temperature questions, which y'all seem to have a lot of. Temperature questions, and a lot of them about maintaining temperature and how to control temperature and, why and what ramps to use and things like that.
Now, at the end of the show, Steve, you're going to be able to try to guess what the theme of today's Q&A has been.
Oh, how fun.
What the next question will be.
So it's a game show.
Yeah.
What the topic is going to be in the next question.
It's great.
Do you love coming here and being abused by us?
So much.
Well, that's a Texas crack wrangler. He loves the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, there you go.
So do we have, in fact, a question keyed up?
We do.
Ah.
All right. Yeah, let's go ahead and hit the first one.
All right. Room or beer temperatures? Dear Bruce Strong, I have a question on fermentation temperature. When talking about fermentation temperatures, I'm also to assume we are talking about the temperature of the room that the beer is fermenting in, or the actual temperature of the beer in the fermentation carboy. I've been just going off of room temp for a while now, but notice that my primary fermenters produce a lot of heat in the first few days, sometimes taking the temps above the optimal range for the yeast.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're never talking about room temperature. I mean, we talk about room temperature in the, well, you know, it may affect your cooling or whatever, but you really can't ferment it. The biggest change you're ever going to make to your beer is having fermentation temperature control, because ambient temperature is kind of wrong for fermentation, unless you're making something sour or something funky. It's just that the yeast, they start off really active, they produce a lot of heat, and things they're charging along, and they're producing a lot of these compounds that you don't want in the beer. And then, you know, they start to taper off and they're cooling down and the whole mass cools down and then they don't quite finish out. It's better if they're cooler at the beginning and warmer at the end.
That's right.
Regardless, you want to measure the temperature of the beer. And that's simply done, a stick-on fermenter strip like you were using on your carboy. Perfect. That actually tells you the temperature of the beer inside. It really does work. Mm-hmm. But you don't need anything fancier than that. But you need the temperature of the beer.
Yeah. There's one caveat to that, and that if you have a cheap single-stage controller or a controller high differential, if you're measuring the temperature of the beer and running the refrigerator, let's say, off of that, the refrigerator could overcool by a considerable amount as that beer temperature slowly goes to the set point, if it's cooling at the beginning of fermentation. And then, because the refrigerator, the container temperature is colder than the controller, it's going to cool down past your intended fermentation temperature point. If you get a two-stage controller, one that had both heats and cools, now you can avoid that by, as soon as your beer hits its temperature point and starts to go below it, then the cooling will shut off and the heater can come on and raise that ambient temperature back up to closer to the set point.
It's kind of like catching it as it drops.
It depends on, with I've had that issue with refrigerators. If you've got a glycol system on your fermenter and so on, then you have better control.
You have more of a problem with glycol than you do with a refrigerator. And the reason being, the refrigerator goes down, it doesn't go that cold. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I suggest people use refrigerators versus freezers. It's also for moisture. But the refrigerator box heats up really quick.
Okay.
That's why your refrigerator is constantly going on and off, and it gets down into the 30s. It's not the air in there does not have a lot of
thermal
heat
mass.
Thermal mass, exactly. It's minimal, and then the insulation on those things is minimal, especially if you use an older fridge.
Right.
The seals aren't that great. It tends to not really carry that much, whereas glycol has a lot of thermal mass. Uh-huh. When you surround a container in that, that can be a real problem.
And you can ice it up.
Right. And it'll continue carrying a lot. So, if you, especially on these bigger fermenters, and we've got like four jackets on our fermenters, and each holds, 10 gallons, you got 40 gallons of 28 degree glycol. Uh-huh. There you get a lot of drift if you're not careful. If you got if the differential isn't right, mm-hmm. it can be an issue. But I see what you're saying, and it could be an issue. But I think just having temperature control is far more important than you know, not having it.
I agree. I totally agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. I think we're all saying the same thing. Yeah. All right. Let's do this. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of your questions right after this.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the BrewingNetwork.com.
Are you a member of the White Labs Customer Club? If not, you should be. It's the easiest way to earn free stuff for turning in your old homebrew labels from either Vials or Pure Pitch. All you have to do is save your labels and redeem them for things like free yeast, an exclusive White Labs t-shirt or sweatshirt, and even the opportunity to brew with the yeast man himself, Chris White. Signing up is easy. Just go to whitelabs.com/customer club, fill out the registration form, and then mail in your labels. They will return the favor by sending you awesome White Labs swag. Go sign up today at whitelabs.com/customer club. White Labs, pure yeast and fermentation since 1995. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Check out their brand new patent-pending mash and boil 110-volt electric mashing and boiling unit. This compact all-stainless unit lets you mash, sparge, and boil just about anywhere that has a 110-volt plug. Double wall construction adds to efficiency and safety, and a precise thermostat keeps temperatures where you want them. Unlike insulated buckets and converted coolers, multiple temperature rest mashing is easy to do, all for under $300. They also feature the Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump that does the work of pumps that cost twice as much, as well as exclusive Brewer's Edge regulators and quality Keg King kegs and disconnects. Check them out today at williamsbrewing.com to bruise their vast selection.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand,
Man, SantaClean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit FiveStarChemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the Five Star treatment today.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. Check out the AHA. They have a deal going on right now. If you go to thebrewingnetwork.com, use the offer code BN2018 when you sign up for a new membership, or I believe when you renew your membership through the Brewing Network, you're going to get a free copy of either Wild Brews or Farmhouse Ales. And I believe BCS, Brewing Classic Styles, is also part of that option.
Right.
Use the offer code BN2018 and support the AHA and the Brewing Network at the same time. All right. Next question, pornographic Steven.
All right. This one's from Herbert.
Is it about fermentation temperatures?
Yeah.
How'd I guess?
Actually, fermentation temperature ramps.
Okay. Ramps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Herbert, bringing it strong.
Hey guys, grateful for the show. My question is about fermentation temperature control. I'll ferment on the lower end of the temperature range depending on the lab's recommendations. Mm. I'll always start at the low end for 2 to 4 days and start ramping temps up 2 degrees every 2 to 3 days. What are the benefits of this? Would a beer benefit from all the characteristics the strain of yeast has to offer at all temps? Or is the final temperature I ferment out at what I get in final beer? Is this necessary, or would a one temperature in the lab's recommended range suffice with a final ramp to ferment out?
I got a few things to say about this. So,
yeah.
the recommended temperatures, I hear this all the time. You know, talking about something or one of the recipes in Brewing Classic Styles, something people think, you know, the lab's recommended temperature is blah blah blah. I'm like, well, doesn't really matter what the recommended temperature is. Yeast will work, most yeast will work down, even ale yeast will work down into the, you know, the 50s.
Yeah, upper 50s,
you know,
yeah.
12 to, you know, and up to, you know, into the 90s before they conk out, 90s Fahrenheit. So really it'll work in any range. And what you're looking for is the ideal character that you want to achieve. And it doesn't matter what the lab's saying. The lab's saying, well, you know, this is what we tested it at, and it seems to produce these flavors. That's great. Thank you. But not as useful as you'd think. It's more important to try it yourself and to see where it's going to work in your situation, how you're doing it. So I wouldn't always go to the low end of the recommended and, you know, go up from there. Sometimes that may work, sometimes not. What are you achieving by that? You're not going to get the full expression of the yeast across all those temperatures. I think that's what they're asking is, like, am I getting everything that I'll do? I think that the character of the beer, would you agree, John, is pretty much determined by the earlier part of the fermentation versus the end. The end is about kind of cleaning up any
the byproducts, yeah.
Byproducts and
acetaldehyde, diacetyl, your VDKs, yeah.
Generally, I do like to start a degree or two cooler than, you know, what
the median.
Yeah. And then I tend to kind of hold around there and then raise up towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The beginning of the fermentation is when lots of yeast growth is happening, and yeast growth is where most of the byproducts, most of the fermentation character is being built. Your esters are building then. And the faster, the faster the yeast grows, the more byproducts they're going to kick out. And if you think about it like a guy sitting in a cubicle, he's got, work coming in, he's doing work and he's putting out his product, or in case of the yeast cell, they're taking in nutrients, they're, metabolizing those nutrients. And then as they produce the ethanol and carbon dioxide, which are like the very end products of that metabolism, the lowest, possible state, the yeast has to go through a couple of steps to produce ethanol and carbon dioxide. Acetaldehyde is an intermediate step in the production of ethanol. So if the yeast cell is growing really fast, taking in nutrients very fast at the beginning of fermentation, they're not gonna hang on to that acetaldehyde to break it down into ethanol. They're just gonna kick it right out of the cell, and so you end up with a high amount of acetaldehyde in the final beer. If you don't give the enough yeast with enough temperature and activity to clean that up, then you're gonna have acetaldehyde in the final beer. There's balancing your pitching rate to balancing the yeast character and the temperature to control the amount of yeast character that you're generating in the beginning versus the number of healthy active yeast at the end of fermentation to clean up and maturate that beer. Would agree with that kind of mm-hmm. big picture mm-hmm. scenario?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, when it comes back to temperature control, I mean, in general, we recommend starting cool, finishing warm because of that overall big picture. The actual temperatures you use for a yeast strain depend on manufacturer's recommendations, but also really your experience, your pitching rate, and the amount of yeast character that you want out of that beer.
All right. Next question.
All right. This one's from Christopher. Hi, Jamil and John. I've been brewing for about 5 years and recently invested in a fermenter with built-in temperature control. It's the SS BrewTech Brew Bucket with heating and cooling. I have read in Jamil's yeast book that the yeast do not like temperature changes of more than 1 degree Fahrenheit in a 24-hour period. For optimal fermentation, should I have my degree of accuracy on the fermenter set to plus or minus 0.5 Fahrenheit? How about when pitching a yeast slurry into cooled wort? Does the cooled wort and yeast slurry need to be within 1 degree Fahrenheit of each other? If the wort is at 65 degrees and the slurry is at 7 degrees, will the yeast end up expressing heat shock proteins?
So I'm not sure where the 1 degree in 24 hours comes from.
That was more like 1 degree an hour.
Right. So the heat shock protein thing is either when you force the yeast, you drop them into something warmer or colder, generally by 10 degrees is kind of, it's depending on the strain and other conditions.
Right.
But, if it's less than that, it tends not to be a problem. I would try and get it close to what it is, but if it's 3 degrees, 5 degrees, you're probably fine. As far as 24 hours, generally, so like when we're doing lagers, you don't want to change the temperature more than 3°C in 24 hours. Like 6 degrees Fahrenheit a day. So when we do lagers at Heretic, we'll drop the temperature as we're cooling it 3 degrees Fahrenheit in the morning, 3 degrees Fahrenheit at the end of the day on the controller.
Okay.
And then we're slowly ramping it down. The reason you don't want to do that too quickly is because if you cool the yeast at the right rate, crashing can make them essentially gather more glycogen reserves quickly, I think, and store more glycogen. It's one of the things that helps with prepping yeast for packaging when, right, like a yeast manufacturer is producing a product for you. And it's one of the things that they do, or I believe almost all of them do, to prepare yeast that has a lot of glycogen reserves. But when you quickly crash yeast, it's at the expense of certain compounds, which are the precursors of esters. And so when you are trying to cool down a lager fermentation to lagering temp, you slowly bring that temperature down. You don't want to crash it quick. You want to bring it down slowly so that those compounds are utilized another way. I don't know exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. I read a paper from, I can't remember who, it's got a citation in the book. About expressing, you know, like 50% more of these compounds that later on become flavor active in the beer, and by if you quickly crash the temperature.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of craft brew lagers don't have very good head retention, and I wonder if it's because of this perception that, you know, at the end of lagering or the end of fermentation, they're crash cooling, chilling too fast, and maybe excreting more lipids from the yeast cell. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for a nice Pilsner, you would expect very good head retention. But I've seen it in a couple of major brands where, you know, head doesn't last more than 30 seconds.
I think there's a few things going on there, and one is I think we've become kind of spoiled with these high hop beers, which tend to have
great
really
head
good
retention,
head retention, and a lot of the lagers won't have that much in the way of hops. The other is, you know, if you look at some of these German Pilsners, they tend to be higher carbonated. A lot of times, and so we're served. You'll see some that are served at higher carbonation and much more aggressively, where you're filling, quite a bit of the glass with foam and to develop that head. Whereas craft beer, a lot of times the serving is not up to really the Pilsner
standards,
right? So I don't, because a lot of times the beers are used to serving are these highly hopped IPAs that tend to have real good head retention because all the hop compounds in there, and the the high malt levels, and whereas the Pilsners tend to be lower malt levels, less hops.
Yeah, that's true.
Less residuals. Yeah, good point though. And on the what sort of differential, like John was saying earlier, you don't want these wide swings, and if you have a high differential, you may end up with the fridge cooling down too much, and then the beer's not reacting that quick, and then you'll overshoot. So a finer differential certainly does help. You don't want your fridge switching on and off constantly. It's going to burn out, but
same time, you don't want to overshoot 10 degrees.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we will have more of your questions right after this.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever so subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn the cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com. Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high-temperature March pump, and either a top-tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer
into beer.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. I want to tell you about White Labs and their pure liquid yeast. It means better beers. White Labs boasts the highest concentration of yeast in the industry thanks to the patented Flex Cell technology and pure pitch packaging. The yeast contained, delivered using these innovations, are propagated in all grain wort, providing the perfect nutrients for growth and optimal performance. With White Labs pure liquid yeast, your finished beers will meet the high-quality flavor profiles that you intend to produce. Discover the White Labs difference. Visit whitelabs.com/yeastbank to find the perfect strain for your next beer today. All right, let's see here. Next question.
Give us something about fermentation this time.
Yeah, fermentation temperature. That'd be right up my boat.
Perfect. This one's about fermentation temperature controllers. So it's close. All right, close.
Good job pulling that one out.
Yeah.
All right, this one's from Antonio. John and Jamil, first I want to say enjoy the show and appreciate the knowledge bombs. I am looking to invest in fermentation temperature control, and I know you guys have done a show on the topic before. I am a small batch brewer, and I am considering a wine cooler with built-in digital thermostat. Will this do the job, or should I purchase a full-size fridge with a Johnson or Renko controller? Thanks for the time.
Well, I think everybody wants a full-size Johnson. Bebo, do you agree?
She agrees. She's nodding, yes, yeah.
Very good. That's the wine cooler. That's kind of like a dorm fridge size thingy.
Right.
They're like mini fridge size.
So that's okay for keeping your wine at a temperature, or they turn them into these caskerators too, where you want cellar temp. Yeah, absolutely. But the problem with them is you could use that, but you need the controller. The reason for your Johnson or your Ranco is look on POS face. Talking about Johnsons, it gets her interested. The reason for your Johnson is to control the temperature based on the beer temperature. The Johnson allows you to attach your probe to the fermenter, or put it in the fermenter, and once you've got your Johnson in the fermenter, you're able to measure the actual temperature of the beer and control cooling based on the temperature of the beer.
Right.
The problem with relying on one of those wine fridges and the digital controller on that is that you're just changing the ambient temperature around the beer, and it's measuring the ambient, which is not going to respond to the needs of the beer and the yeast, because the holding a consistent ambient temperature means that when the yeast are slowing down, you're actually applying more cooling than is needed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you need a good Johnson.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah,
can't beat a good Johnson.
I think you probably would want to go, even though he says he's doing small batch brewing, maybe 1-2 gallon. I'm feeling that wine fridge for the money is going to be just not up to the task. I would kind of...
Well, and more expensive than you need. You could buy yourself a little dorm fridge if you need compact.
Yeah.
And a good Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah. Good Johnson's running only $50.
Even depending on how handy you are with electrical stuff, too.
You build your own Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You get on eBay.
My roommate took a little Raspberry Pi, and essentially that ended up being a... temperature controller, and hooked it up to his little dorm fridge.
Right.
And that works really well.
And they have these little controllers on eBay out of China for $12 or $20 or what they are. And pretty cheap.
Get yourself a good Johnson for cheap.
You crying there a little bit, Beva? Yeah.
A little bit. When you were talking about the pro, I lost it. I lost all self-control.
She lost all self-control.
There you have it. Talk about
Johnsons.
Good Johnsons. And
can't beat
small probes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. This is why we get all the best sponsors.
That's right.
It's quality.
Quality, not quantity. It's the same thing you want in a Johnson.
Right. Two-stage, preferably.
Two-stage is better, Two's better than one. Okay, next question.
This one's named Temperature Control Ripples.
Ripples, see, there's ripples. Another thing you want at Johnson, yes.
Right,
some good ripple. Gentlemen.
John and Jamil.
John and Jamil, gentlemen. They're just gentlemen.
Yeah, this person obviously hasn't listened.
Mm-hmm. For fermentation temperature control at my kegerator, I use hysteretic on and off temperature control modules. These allow me to set the hysteresis, set point, compressor delay, etc. During fermentation, how much temperature ripple would you consider to be too much? During storage in kegs, would a few degrees of ripple matter at all? My controller, an STC-1000, allows me to get about 0.75 degrees Fahrenheit of ripple during fermentation if I only use it for heating. Use a heating pad and set the fridge to a lower temperature. The sensor is taped to the side of the carboy with some insulation covering it to keep out the ambient temperature, so I consider this to be close to the actual ripple that is seen by the fermenting liquid.
So I think there's two questions there. One is when you're storing finished beer. Can you do a few degrees swing?
Yeah.
I think generally when I'm storing finished beer, like a refrigerator,
Yeah, generally it's
no
cold.
Controller.
Right.
Yeah, it keeps it. There's no... the reason you need temperature control of fermentation is that the yeast are producing heat at different rates at different times of the process. Mm-hmm. That's what you're trying to control. Once it's done and it's finished, there's no heat being produced, so a regular fridge will keep the very constant temperature on that beer. It may swing by maybe a half to a quarter of a degree, if mm-hmm. anything, because it's a large mass of liquid.
Right.
And as long as the ambient is regularly refreshed to whatever below 40 you're doing in a food fridge, it's good. You don't have to do anything. You don't even need a controller on that. When you're trying to control fermentation temperature, the tighter the control you can have, the better.
The more consistent the yeast activity, because yeah. temperature controls activity.
Right. But, you know, you can wear out your compressor by cycling it on and off. But, you know, if you've got an anti-short cycle delay, still, the more on and off cycles you do on the refrigeration equipment, the shorter amount of time it's going to last. So you're kind of trying to balance that. Generally, a 1 degree swing is considered okay. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want it to be like 3 degrees.
Right.
That can still be okay, but you're kind of pushing your luck.
Yeah. 2 degrees is kind of common for your Ranco and Johnson mm-hmm. controllers. So, yeah.
Well,
one
and
to
if
two.
You set it to one and it's above and below.
Yeah, then you end up getting too much cycling.
You get about two degrees, you know, total range. Because the problem is, if the yeast feel like, okay, everything's cooling down, it's towards the end of fermentation, they start to drop out. Yeah. And you don't want to encourage early flocculation.
Right. Premature yeast flocculation right. is a big issue.
Especially with misuse of your Johnson.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. Let's take one more break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up with two more questions, I think, right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high-temperature March pump, and either a top-tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The BrewEasy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new Brew Easy.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of the buzz, the forum, the learning center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. Oh. See, being sober and doing a three-show day is not that hard.
No.
I guess being sober is the hard part. But, yeah. All right.
We should have ice cream next time. That would help.
Right. Next question. Yeah. Ice cream. Yes.
Okay. It's about a fermentation temperature sensor. Mm-hmm. I'm a relatively new home brewer catching up on old shows. On your February 20th, 2011 live Q&A show, you had a question about using a thermowell in the center of the fermenting beer to sense slash control fermentation temperature versus taping the temperature sensor to the outside of the fermenter and insulating it really well. Both Jamil and John gave their opinions. Then Jamil said, I was wondering what Blickman would do. I would love to hear what Blickman would do. Did you ever ask him? And if not, would you?
Well, I did.
Yes.
I know there's always people that like to stick their probe in the fermenter, and I've mm-hmm. always said, no, just tape it to the outside. And people have said, no, my God, and people tried to prove that there was some huge differential between them. I'm like, it's liquid in contact with glass or plastic in contact with the sensor. Convection. And convection, it's the temperature. Well, our good friend John Blickman, I forwarded him the email, and his response was, I have actually ran an experiment to test out the... See, this is why John Blickman is John Blickman. I ran an experiment to test out the situation a number of years ago to ensure that I had no instrument measurement error from normal instrument to instrument tolerance. I used the same probe and probe reading device both inside and outside of the conical. So he wasn't even using different equipment. It's exact same equipment on both measurements.
Right.
What I was looking for was an accurate delta T, not necessarily an absolute accurate temperature. The sensor I use, so he's looking for the difference between measuring inside and measuring outside. So you can't say, well, the sensor may be off. It's like, well, he's proving the difference between the two measurements. The sensor I used was an NTC thermistor. These are commonly used in thermopens and refrigeration controllers in the 0 to 250 range. Ideal for brewers, they are just as accurate as an RTD, but less fussy and fast reacting. What I was trying to determine was the temperature gradient across a small homebrew size vessel during an active fermentation cycle. This was a question we got often from our customers. In this case, it was a 14.5 gallon fermentator conical. I taped the probe mid-height on the sidewall of the conical using aluminum duct tape. This aluminum tape is very thermally conductive and aids the sensor in achieving the same temperature as the side of the conical. The conical was in a temp-controlled refrigerator. I allowed the sidewall reading to stabilize and took a reading. I then placed the same probe sanitized inside of the conical through the airlock hole and immersed it to the same depth but in the middle of the wort. Again, I waited for the reading to stabilize and I took a reading. The readings were maybe 1 minute apart. I measured a half a degree Fahrenheit delta. So my opinion was that in small vessels used in homebrewing, the cost and hassle of using a thermowell and having to clean it was not worth it. The simplicity of the old school tape is what I do at home. It works great, and there's nothing to sanitize or clean.
There you go. That's pretty damn thorough.
Right.
0.5
Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit. That's right. Nothing. Yeah.
Yes.
In a quarter of a degree C. In 14.5 gallon fermenter?
Right.
Yeah, that's as big as kind of any homebrewer is really going to go for anyway.
There's really no issue with that. And the time you really want to control the fermentation is active fermentation,
right,
where there should be, if there's any fermentation going on, there are convections happening. There's CO2 being released. If you see bubbling come out of your airlock, the liquid is being circulated and stirred in a continuous fashion, and the temperature in the center is pretty much the temperature on the outside.
It's homogeneous.
Right. And, you know, if you throw some insulation over that thing, I think there's probably even less differential between them. So you can just tape the sensor on the outside. Blickman's suggesting use the metallized duct tape.
Right.
And that could help transfer a little heat onto the, or the temperature onto the
probe
sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, slap a piece of bubble wrap or styrofoam block over the top of it. I guarantee you're reading the temperature of the beer and it's not an issue. All right, last question. We'll call it a day.
This one's about the last third of fermentation. A number of times I've heard Jamil recommend increasing the temperature during fermentation in order to keep the yeast active, especially, quote-unquote, during the last third of fermentation. How do you determine when fermentation is two-thirds complete? I know there's a great deal of subjectivity involved, but I'm hoping for the best objective, measurable guidelines you can offer. For example, if I'm fermenting a 1.080 wort that I expect to reach a final gravity of 1.014, does the last third of fermentation start at around 1.036, which is 44 points into the expected total of 66?
Right. So clearly the answer, how do you know a beer is two-thirds of the way through fermentation, is when there is one-third left. Then you are two-thirds of the way through fermentation. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, that's right.
I think that's clearly the answer. That was the answer yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, right. So I've said this multiple times, and really... yeah, you could measure the gravity and you could do that. Generally, what I'm trying to, behavior I'm trying to convey is, as you see fermentation, so fermentation, starts out a little slow and then it takes off and it's raging and it's going and going and going and it seems pretty consistently raging, and then you see it start to taper off. And it's starting to taper off around... you know, the last third,
right?
When you say, John,
yeah.
Of fermentation, it's at that point when it looks like it's starting to slow at all that mm-hmm. I like to take the cooling off and let it rise a little bit, or, you know, just back off on the cooling, you know, raise the temperature a degree or two on the controller mm-hmm. and let it keep going at an active pace. I don't want to force it to slow down. I want to let it keep going as long as possible.
Right.
And so that's the point we're trying to get across is, mm-hmm. you know, keep the fermentation active as long as possible.
Right.
Don't
let keep the yeast active. Let them maturate the beer.
Mm-hmm. And the warmer it is, the more active they are, the better they'll do that.
Yeah.
And it sounds could be pretty a third, approximate.
You know, it could be mm-hmm. two-thirds of the way through fermentation. It could be three-fourths of the way through fermentation. It could even be four-fifths. But right. The point is, towards the end, activity is slowing mm-hmm. down. Try to raise the temperature and keep right. those yeast active so they clean up the diacetyl and acetaldehyde.
You don't have to nail it on like exactly. a hundredth of a gravity point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's going to vary from yeast strain, recipe to recipe.
Exactly.
But the point being, you know, try and keep the yeast active.
Right.
So maybe not a third, maybe a half, maybe three quarters.
When it starts falling.
Right. When you see it start to slow down, back off in the cooling a little bit, you know, raise it a couple of mm-hmm. degrees. I wouldn't completely take it off because, you know, it depends on the yeast. And
right.
Some of them it can be, you know, get too active all of a sudden, and then you've got other problems. But, mm-hmm. you know, you just start backing it off. I like to, you know, take a degree or two off every day, and, you know, because it's going to continue to slow. And you want it to rise up a little bit.
So you're saying in this craft that is a lot of science, that mm-hmm. there's an art to it in this point?
Right. It could probably boil down to exact science, and there could probably be a controller built that to do this automatically. And yes, John Blickman could build that all for us. You know, if he listened to the show, he'd probably hear that idea, and he'd go for it and
make
build
something
it.
For it, yeah.
But... On the downside, if he listened to the show, he'd probably cancel his sponsorship. So it's a two-edged sword. Mm-hmm. We'll have to mention it to him at some point separately.
Yeah. But, don't get wrapped around two-thirds. Just understand that we're saying...
The concept,
exactly.
Yes.
Cool. It's an art as well as a science. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Well, and if you enjoyed this show and you enjoy our sponsors, I would suggest you reach out to them and tell them how wonderful they are. I know if you listen live, Blickman Engineering has some Black Friday deals. You check out at BlickmanEngineering.com.
Sweet.
Jump on there right now and get yourself maybe some new sweet BrewEasy system or any the Cornicle or so many of the great things.
Therminator.
Therminator, yeah.
Literally any kind of temperature controller.
Any type of temperature controller, exactly.
For God's sakes,
for
please.
For God's sakes, don't be a porno Steve.
Don't be
get yourself a fermentation controller, and your beer will improve off of that one thing. I guarantee it. If you get a chance, also check out the AHA offer. Use that offer code BN2018 and check out YLabs.com and all their great yeast at their yeast bank. Good people, good stuff, and help and support the show so you don't have to. Do anything other than say thanks to them.
There you go.
Check it out. And until then, brew strong, everybody.
Brew strong, everyone.
It burns.